live. It's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Cause every minute, every hour, you'll be shaken by the
strange and mighty power. It's a happy, happy Halloween, happy Thursday here on Drive Time Sports. I don't think there's anything that could possibly affect my mood today. It's one of the very few days I will remove the unbiased sports commentator role, the sports analyst role for fandom. And I know the guy joining me on radio, I can't think of anybody else I would rather have this conversation with or share the airwaves with today, because he gets to do the exact same thing. The Los Angeles Dodgers are World Series champions for the 8th time in franchise history, and it comes at the expense of the New York Yankees and one of the most compelling storyline just drowned World Series that we have had in a very long time. Steve Bornstein joining us over the phone right now. Steve, it took 5 games for the Dodgers to claim World Series championship number 8. And yes, it's a lovely day.
Impartiality be damned today. There is no impartiality today. It is all about the Dodgers winning the World Series. And I guess what it really came down to was how big a moment and how impactful a moment was game one. Was that grand slam the end of it? I mean, you talk about that in 1988, right, when Kirk Gibson hit the home run against the A's in game one. Was it the same impact that the winning game one in the grand slam fashion, did that end this World Series right then and there?
Well, going back to the analysis that we had going into the World Series, I think that it was really a popular opinion among pundits and analysts that the Yankees needed to win game one, not because it would set the tone for the series, but because the one true ace in this series was Gerrit Cole, and he was going to be on the mound. And guess what? The Yankees got a stellar performance from Gerrit Cole, not only in game one, but game five. But if we're talking about game one, they got a stellar performance from him, and they still lost. At that point in time, I think not only was it a momentum factor, the Yankees were not going to win Game 2. It wasn't going to happen. Dodger Stadium was going to be rocking for Game 2. But the Dodgers slayed the massive beast that the Yankees had the one advantage of in this series. And then you take a look at the rotation 2-3-4. That kind of favors the Dodgers a little bit, right? So not only from a momentum standpoint, but I think just from an X's and O's standpoint, taking out Gerrit Cole in game one, or taking out the Yankees despite a stellar performance from Gerrit Cole in game one, that's what set the tone for this series. That's the way I view it.
I know that it was popular in 2017 against the Astros and 2018 against the Red Sox, and then in future postseason additions for the Dodgers, it was easy to question Dave Roberts and some of the managerial decisions, some of the on-the-field decisions in the postseason in the World Series. I can't think of a bigger storyline than the decision to throw Nestor Cortez in game one in the 10th inning of that game. And you can look at a lot of decisions that Aaron Boone made for the Yankees in this World Series, and shouldn't he fall under that same criticism?
Well, yes, because that's the way we view baseball, but I'm never that guy. I mean, I think that there are times that you can look at a decision made in the World Series, you can look at a decision made on the baseball diamond in a big game and say, that was stupid. But when it works, we never talk about it. And that's been my biggest... That's how I've protected Dave Roberts. He's tried to push the right buttons. It just didn't work. And I think if you go back and you look at the World Series, you know, Boone said the reason he went with Cortez in game one against Freeman is because he loved the lefty-on-lefty matchup. Okay, I get it. That's a typical move, right? You don't have to be a savant to make that move. It didn't pay off. If it did pay off, we're looking at it and saying, man, Boone pushed all the right buttons. Because you know who did push the right buttons in the series? It was Dave Roberts. And you don't just magically get smart, and you don't just magically become an idiot when you are managing or coaching at the highest level possible. So I do believe that with Major League Baseball, we tend to overanalyze things a little bit too much. But I will say this about the Cortez move. I forgot he was on the Yankees roster. And I'm a guy that follows baseball through and through throughout the season. We hadn't seen him pitch in over a month. And you brought him in game one, Dodger Stadium, with Freddie Freeman at the plate. That's a ballsy move that didn't pay off.
Yeah, no question about it. I'm realizing as I'm doing this that you're interviewing me, and here I am asking you the question.
Oh, no, no, no.
Let's reverse roles here for a minute, because all of a sudden I'm having deja vu here.
No, listen. There are no rules today. There are no rules on this show today. But, Steve, looking at the way this whole series played out, even though it's over in five games, and I think if you're a New York Yankee fan today, we'll start with the Yankees, you're sick to your stomach because you should have won game one, right? I mean, it was there for the taking. You had your opportunity to win game two, even though the Dodgers thoroughly dominated that game. The Yankees had an opportunity in the top of the ninth inning to steal it. And then last night, we saw one of the biggest collapses in World Series history. This is something, that fifth inning of Game 5 at Yankee Stadium is something that we are going to see forever. It is connected to the Freddie Freeman Grand Slam. And you and I had a conversation last night over the phone, and you brought up the only comparable debacle, and that was the Patriots and the Falcons. That's the only game that you could think of where you saw a bigger collapse on the biggest stage. And I agree with you. I can't recall another one.
And I still remember in that Patriots-Falcons World Series, when they went to halftime, the Falcons were up, 24-3 at that point, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And I still remember saying to myself, it's not over.
Right. Right.
I didn't say that last night going into the fifth inning. I didn't say that. When I went to the fifth inning last night, between text messages, it was over. Like, I never saw this coming. But to underscore just how incredibly bizarre this was the most routine plays. This is a catch of a lazy, shallow fly ball to center field. This is a routine throw from the shortstop to the third baseman, and then I don't know if he thought that the ball was really quickly getting to first base or if Gerrit Cole just didn't give a damn because he wasn't running, because he didn't move. Like, he literally was walking to the dugout. So these were three just absolutely mental blunders, the likes of which I've never seen, not just in the World Series. You don't see this in a Major League game of any kind. I mean, even the worst team in Major League Baseball doesn't commit three within a 5-minute time span.
You know, I go back and I watched this inning this morning, actually, and I wanted to kind of dissect the issues to come up with some sort of explanation for what happened with the Yankees. And we'll start with Aaron Judge and the botched routine fly ball in center field. Aaron Judge is looking at Kike Hernandez on first base. So when he comes up to make the grab on Edmund's pop-up, he is watching Kike Hernandez. And my question is, why? Why?
It's a shallow fly ball. He's not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere. And even if he does, okay, you get one runner in scoring position, you're up 5-0 with one out. Who cares? That was the misplay there by Aaron Judge. We go to the throw to third off of the Will Smith routine ground ball. In all fairness, the way that Kike slid into third base, it was a brilliant, brilliant run from second to third. The angle he took, there was a weird hop on that ball. That is a more difficult play for Volpe to make than I think we originally thought. I sat and watched that play about 4 or 5 times before we did this. That's a difficult play. It put Jazz Chisholm in a very, very tough spot. Not an easy play to make. You know what? Pat Kike Hernandez on the back. It was excellent base running. The Mookie Betts run to first, I have no idea what Gerrit Cole was thinking. I have no idea. And when you look at the idea of Gerrit Cole giving up 5 runs, but none of them were earned in that fifth inning, that's hogwash, because they get out of that inning if he makes a play that a little leaguer will make. That's the play that is so mind-boggling to me.
That's a common sense. Even if you know, this is the third out, you at least make the attempt. He never at any point took a step towards first base. He comes off the mound. He's literally on his way to the dugout. And then he just stands there and having this befuddled look on his face like, oops, my bad. And give him credit. Like, that's the best pitching performance, bar none, of any team in this two-team World Series. That was the best performance. His performance in Game 1 and his performance in Game 5. He threw 107 pitches. last night. In this day and age, to throw 107 pitches, but it says two things, right? It says, number one, he's an outstanding pitcher. It also spoke loudly, especially last night, about how shaky the Yankees' bullpen was, and that's why he was out there as long as he was last night.
True. No, that's a fine point. And before we move off the New York Yankees, for all the buttons that Aaron Boone pushed that weren't the correct moves, right? I will say, if you're a Yankee fan, the one thing you can be upset about, and I believe that Aaron Boone should shoulder all this criticism of the world, is just how sloppy the Yankees have played, not only in the World Series, but all season long. This is the worst base-running team in Major League Baseball. That's not good. Okay, and I think that the Gerrit Cole play last night, not covering first, this play right here is a perfect example as to why the Dodgers are World Series champions, because Mookie Betts ran out that routine ground ball, where Gerrit Cole did not make the routine play to first base. You can get by on sheer talent when you're going up against the likes of the Tigers and the Guardians and the Royals and the Blue Jays and the Rays. You can get by on sheer talent. You can't get by on sheer talent when you are playing a well-disciplined team that makes you pay time and time again. And that's what the Dodgers did all postseason. They made the Padres pay. They made the Mets pay. Well, they made the Yankees pay. So sloppy baseball and undisciplined baseball is the one thing that you can point at Aaron Boone today and say, eh, you know what, if you move on, that's the reason why. Because they play an undisciplined brand of baseball, Steve. It's that simple.
No, and I totally agree. And I think, you know, you and I spend a lot of time talking about the differences between these two leagues, the Dodgers and the Yankees. And I know we'll get to the Dodgers more specifically here in a second. But I would make the argument that the road that these two teams took in getting to the World Series was diametrically different from one another. The Yankees disposed of the Royals and the Guardians, whereas the Dodgers took care of arguably a team that was better than they were at that point in the season, in the Padres, and arguably the hottest team in baseball at that time, and that was the New York Mets. And to go and finish those three series and go a combined 11-5 in those three series is pretty incredible.
Oh, it is. It is. And if you are a Padres fan, and I know plenty of them, today you're probably sick as well. Because if you win either game 4 at home or game 5 at Dodger Stadium, where you gave up only 2 runs, you are celebrating a World Series championship today. That's how close Mike Shildt and the San Diego Padres are. I think they're that close. Now, with all that being said,
no question.
Yeah, they are right there on the brink. With that being said, Steve, now that the Dodgers have won the World Series championship, and we can talk about, you know what, before we talk about next season, I do want to point out a couple of things with this roster. I want this to sink in. Dave Roberts won a World Series with a star-studded offensive lineup. He did it with an ailing Shohei Ohtani. I know that Ohtani's not 100%, but it's still Ohtani. Okay, he did it with Mookie, he did it with Freeman, he did it with Hernandez, Tommy Edman was fantastic, but he also won a World Series where he had 3 starters throughout the entire postseason. And those 3 starters were Jack Flaherty, a rookie Yoshi Yamamoto, and Walker Buehler, fresh off a second Tommy John surgery. That's what's jaw-dropping about this Dodger performance to me.
And these 3 starters, and then the guys that didn't make the roster for whatever reason, the Miguel Vargases of the world who weren't on the roster in the postseason. And to think that this rotation with, again, Yamamoto, Buehler, and Flaherty, and then you look at the number of pitchers that started games, 22 different pitchers, 22 different starting pitchers, 16 different pitchers recording saves. The pitcher who recorded the save in game 7 was Walker Buehler. I mean, think about this for a second and just how bizarre this would be for any ordinary team, any team that won 80 games, 70 games. This is not a team that won 70 or 80 games. No, this is the World Series champions that did this. And to tell me that it has to have this 5-man rotation, to tell me that it's going to have this perfect lineup. We just showed you, with the weirdest blueprint ever, we just showed you how to do this, because this is not an ordinary way to win a World Series.
No, and I think for everyone else, especially Dodger fans today, right? So I think you have to start looking, because winter meetings are going to be here before we know it. You take a look at what the opening depth chart is going to be next season. This team's going to be better, and they don't even have to make a single move in free agency. The idea that Tyler Glasnow is going to be back, Tony Gonsolin's going to be back, I believe Clayton Kershaw will be back. I don't know what you get out of Kershaw, but he's going to be back. You just look at the rotation, and it's going to be better. Now, there are a couple of free agents that you have to lock up, Blake Treinen being one of them, because they don't win the World Series without Blake Treinen. There are some moves that the Dodgers have to make, but in the same sense, they can sit on their hands this offseason and still be the front runners to win it all next year.
I think the question that's going to be asked, and at some point, someone's going to have to sit down with Shohei Ohtani and ask the question about his shoulder. How much of an impact did it have? How much of an impact will it have going forward once he gets the surgery done? And ask him the question, look, do you want to go both ways? Do you want to be a pitcher? Because if you don't, we'll go get one, right? I mean, just get it over with. Go get another pitcher. You leave Ohtani as your designated hitter. You make him the right fielder, whatever you want to do. Make him decide that. Because if he wants to do it, fine. That's great. If you don't, go get another pitcher. Because you may have to replace Buehler. You may have to go out and get at least one other starting pitcher. Maybe you don't need a 21, 22 game winner, because quite frankly, I don't think those are going to exist anymore.
Right.
But you need a guy who's going to be reliable, who's going to get you bulk innings in the rotation. But that question needs to be asked. The question needs to be asked of, what do you look for in free agency? I will tell you unequivocally right now, for this moment, after what I saw yesterday from Juan Soto in that press conference, if I'm a Dodger, I want nothing to do with this guy. This guy is only in it for himself, which I get. That's cool. That's great. You want to be in it for yourself? That's great. The Dodgers do not need that in their lineup and in their clubhouse. They had that already. They had that with Manny Machado. It didn't work out well. Don't repeat it. So decide, they need to make some very big front office decisions as to what is important to them going forward. And what is important to them, what should be important to them going forward, is the long-term viability of Shohei Ohtani. I don't know if he hits 55 and steals 59 if he's splitting time between hitting and pitching. I don't think he does. So Dodgers need to make that decision and help him come to that decision as well.
Yeah, if I'm the Dodgers front office, it's the best front office in baseball. From the farm system to the free agent moves to the trades they make, Andrew Friedman is an absolute genius. Stay away from Juan Soto, re-up Teoscar Hernandez. That should be number one on the agenda. Number two would be bringing back Walker Buehler and Blake Treinen. Any which order you want, two or three. But number one, lock up Teoscar Hernandez. He deserves it. He was a focal point for this team all season long. You need Teoscar Hernandez. So, two questions before we end this, and we'll start with the Dodgers. Does Teoscar Hernandez return next season?
Yes.
Okay. Now we'll move over to the New York Yankees. Does Juan Soto return to the Bronx next season?
No.
Ooh.
No, Juan Soto will not. No, Juan Soto will not be a Yankee next year, and I can tell you because history shows it. I was having this discussion with my wife this morning. When you watch the post game press conference of any player in any sport, you watch the post game press conference of the last game that a guy plays on any team in any season in any sport. If they're not wearing the hat up front, if they don't show the logo up front, he ain't coming back to that team next year. You watch Juan Soto's press conference last night. He's got his hat turned backwards. He's not a Yankee next year. Or if he is, he's going to make them pay $1 billion for him to come there next year. So my guess is he's headed elsewhere. Where could that be? You and I talked a little bit about that last night. There's only a few teams that could possibly afford him. San Francisco being one, Boston being another, the cross-town rival New York Mets being another. There's only a handful of teams that can afford him. And you know what? If he does go there, God bless him.
Steve Bornstein, great day to be a Dodger fan. Great day to have Steve join us here on air. Steve, what else can I say? Congratulations. Live it up today. It's a beautiful day. This doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't happen very often, but you know what? We're favored right now to do it again in 12 months from now.
That's right. Steve, busy weekend.
The greatest thing in the world. Wasn't it the greatest thing in the world to win it in their stadium? I know everyone likes the idea of winning it in their home field in front of their fans. Isn't there a special, like, sort of sadomasochistic delight, though, in winning it in New York City?
Yeah, I have no complaints over it. I didn't want to see the series go back to Dodger Stadium. And the reason I didn't want to see it go back to Dodger Stadium is because if it did and the Yankees won Game 6, we would be talking about the biggest collapse in Major League Baseball history from the Dodgers' perspective, because I would not have been, let's say Walker Buehler doesn't close it out last night, I wouldn't have felt comfortable going into Game 7. So winning it at New York, yeah, absolutely. Just do it.
Yeah. I had no issue winning it in New York last night. Hey, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's a blast to get you on today, Steve. Always a pleasure. I'm sure we'll talk hot stove relatively soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Always great to talk with Steve Bortstein. It is a tradition. After the Dodger season ends, he always joins me here on Drive Time Sports. Love it. With that, we are out of time on this edition of the show. Have a very safe Halloween night, and I will catch you tomorrow right here on 95.3 The Peak.